Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom, fellow infidels, and welcome to another episode of The Danger Zone here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gadi Edelman. Happy Jerusalem Day. Happy Independence Day. Throughout the world, mostly in the United States, but throughout the world, they celebrate Mother's Day once a year. And yesterday was Mother's Day in the United States. And it was a good time to do the following interview because the individual that I am about to interview, I cannot put into words. This was the hardest interview for me that I've ever had to do. We'll be speaking with Holocaust survivor Frank Grunewald. And the reason that it's a Mother's Day special is because in 1944, literally within an hour of his mother being murdered by the Nazis in Auschwitz, she wrote a letter to her then husband and got that letter to him. Frank Grunewald, Holocaust survivor, did not read that letter until 1967. He then donated that letter to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., where it will be on display forever, in deciding to share that letter with the world. He is an amazing, amazing man whose story is just phenomenal, doesn't even begin to cover what his story is. From surviving the death selection by Dr. Mengele to where he is today living in the United States, to the letter that his mother wrote that ends up at the Holocaust Museum, this is an amazing story that you must listen to. I have interviewed hundreds of people over the years, and as I said, this was without a doubt the hardest interview I've ever had to do, to be able to keep it together through his story. And when you listen, you will understand why I say that. So please stay tuned, and when we come back, we'll have the interview with Holocaust survivor Frank Grunewald. We'll be right back.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time, and it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
We are back. You are listening to The Danger Zone here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gadi Edelman. Thank you so much for joining us today. And as promised, with me on the line, I have Frank Grunewald. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon.
I am so pleased that you could join us today. Now, we've got a lot to cover, but it's going to go quick, but I think we can do this. And I'll just do the lead-in real fast. You were born in 1932 in Czechoslovakia. And tell me from basically that point, if you want to jump till you were a little bit older, World War II started. What happened?
Well, the Nazis invaded Czechoslovakia in the spring of 1939. I was about 6.5 years old. It was a big surprise to us. I had an older brother, and my mother and father, we all lived together in a comfortably in an apartment house in Prague. And as I said, this Nazi invasion came as a huge surprise to us, to the two boys. we didn't follow politics, obviously. I was only 6 and a half. My brother was only 10 and a half. So we didn't follow much of the political scenario. But it came as a big surprise. And shortly after that, we were kicked out of school. We could not attend public school. And shortly after that, we were kicked out of our apartment in Prague. Had to move out, leave everything behind. My dad, who was a physician, could not practice medicine on his own. He had to work in a hospital. And our life changed dramatically at that point. We were then in the summer of 1942, we were transported to a ghetto, which was the Czech ghetto of Terezin. In German, that was called Theresienstadt. And that was an isolation staging area where most of the Czech Jews from Czechoslovakia and some other parts of Europe were transported into this ghetto. And we were basically isolated from the general population. We were there quite hungry and without much to do and without any clothing to buy or anything to buy in the food stores. It was very, very Spartan, run basically like a huge prison camp. And we were there till the winter or till December of 1943. And in December of 1943, after we found out that this was just a staging area and that we were not here permanently, we found out as boys when we were kids, we found out that other people were being transported out of Theresienstadt. So we realized that this was just a staging area,
right,
from which many families are being transported east. And at that time, east meant Poland. So we knew that, I knew, and I was about 11 at this point, that this was a staging area, that we are in danger of being transported. And sure enough, around the second week in December of 1943, we were transported to Auschwitz. And Auschwitz, of course, was we were on the train for 2 days without food. We only had a bucket of water in the train. These were terrible, terrible conditions. We were in a train that was designed to transport cattle. And so we had no place to sit. You had to pretty much sit on the floor of the wagon. And we were in that train for 2 days, and we arrived in December 17th, I think it was, in Auschwitz. And we found out that we were the second huge transport. One came from Theresienstadt in September of roughly 5,000 people, and we were the second transport of approximately 5,000 that came in December. Now, two trains in December and two trains in September.
You were about 11 years old when you went and were transferred to Auschwitz, and I take it at 11 you have a good memory of this.
I have a pretty good memory. I don't I don't remember the small details, but I remember the big stuff that happened, all the major things that happened. Auschwitz was very, very gloomy and very terrifying. We were hit by extreme hunger right from the beginning. We were tattooed. Everybody had a number. But we were put into a camp, which is really very interesting and very critical. We were put into a camp. As I said, there was 5,000 that arrived in September, 4 months before we did, and then 5,000 that came with us in December. So roughly 10,000 people. Children, grandchildren, parents, all in one camp. This was very, very extremely unique to Auschwitz. Never before in the history of Auschwitz has there been a large group of ethnic people that were together like this. most of the time when children arrived at the platform, they and elderly people, they were automatically brought into the gas chambers. They never even went into the center, into the camp itself. So the fact that we were in a what was called by the Germans the Czech family camp, this was a terrifically unique scenario that has never happened before. And after the war, we found out that this camp was a ploy. It was set up by the Nazis, by the SS, because the SS was afraid that if and when the International Red Cross comes through Theresienstadt, which they did, they threatened that they were going to inspect the ghetto of Theresienstadt in the Czech Republic. And so the Nazis were afraid that if the International Red Cross comes through Theresienstadt and starts counting the people, they'll find out that hardly anybody is there, that out of the Jewish population that was transported to Theresienstadt, there is only one-tenth of the people in Theresienstadt. So they were concerned about the Red Cross asking for numbers and saying, well, where is the rest of the Jews? You have only 30,000 people here, or 35,000 people. Where is the other 200,000 or 300,000? So they set up the Czech family camp in Auschwitz to possibly take the International Red Cross into Auschwitz and show them the Czech family camp and say, and show them that, gee, you see here, we have another 10,000 people here. We are keeping them alive, and they're okay, and they're together with their grandparents and parents and so forth. So this was an artificial ploy, the Czech family camp. And then later on, when the International Red Cross finally did visit Theresienstadt and did a superficial visit, in my opinion, because they didn't ask too many questions, they told the SS that they have no further interest in inspecting any of the camps, including Auschwitz. So this is where the story ended, basically.
So while you were in the Czech camp, which, as you said, is extremely unusual, that you were together with your mother and your father and your brother during that time.
That's correct.
And then once the Red Cross went through Czechoslovakia and had no interest in checking up on anyone afterwards, what happened then?
Well, once they went through Theresienstadt, through the ghetto, which was the only large ghetto for Czech Jews. So once they went through Theresienstadt and did a very poor job of really finding out what's going on, they told the International Red Cross, told the Nazis that they have no further interest in questioning or investigating anything. So at that point, this is now very, very early, spring of 1944. So at this point, early 1944, the SS decided to liquidate the Czech family camp. And they first liquidated the 5,000 people that came in September. So most of those people were gassed in March of 1944. So now there was 5,000 of us left. This was now the December transport that I came in with and my family came in with, and there was close to 5,000 people left, and I guess we were next in line. And in July of 1944, we went through a selection, and selection meant that you had to go in front of the SS military medical group, one of them being Dr. Mengele, and we went, we meaning all the children and all the other people, had to go in front of him, in front of his table, and we were selected either to live or to die.
Now, before you got to that room where the selection process took place, and I do want to go into that, but before we go into it, during the time that you were in the camp with your mother and your father and your brother, the four of you got to be together, obviously, because you were in the Czech camp there.
Right.
When they started to dismantle the camp, at what point were you separated from your mother and father, or weren't you?
I wasn't. We were still together.
So you got...
We were together till the camp... Yes, we were together till the camp was liquidated.
So right up until the time that you went before Dr. Mengele for the decision of who lives and who dies, you were still with your mother, your father, and your brother.
That's correct.
Okay.
Just remember, we were in the same, yes, we were in the same camp, but we were not living together. The men were separated, the females were separated from the males. So there was a women's section and a male section.
I understand.
Of that camp, of that Czech family camp.
All right, now I want to get into the Dr. Mengele incident and what happened with you, because that's very, very interesting also. As soon as we get back, we'll be right back after this.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
We are back. Thank you, everyone, for hanging on through the break. You're listening to The Danger Zone on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gadi Edelman. Very, very honored to have with me today Frank Runewald. And he had just told us the story, being born in Czechoslovakia and World War II breaks out. Long story short, he's now in Auschwitz. And take it from where you left off, because this is a very interesting story. Something happened, and you actually saw, and the decision was made as to whether you were going to live or die with Dr. Mengele. Go ahead and tell everyone what happened.
Yeah, well, actually, it was not I'm glad you brought this up. We were outside.
Okay.
This was July 6th, to be exact. July 6th, 1944. The SS, as we said before, the SS decided to terminate or to liquidate family camp, which was designed to fool the International Red Cross,
right, in
believing that we were still all alive and doing well. So once they found out that the Red Cross was not coming, they decided to liquidate and pretty much get rid of most of the people that were in the Czech family camp. So roughly almost 5,000 of us, we were still left, and we went through what was called the selection. Now, at this point, I befriended a prisoner who was in charge of the Czech family camp. He was German. He was not Jewish. He was a German prisoner. I was introduced to him a couple of months, 3 or 4 months before this. And I worked for him as his messenger. I was his sidekick. I was running all the messages for him to the gate, to the front gate, and from the SS to him. His name was Willy Brachmann. Well, I worked with him for roughly 4 months. And when the selection came, I was standing, which I didn't know, but I was standing apparently on death row with other 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, and 12-year-old kids. As soon as Mengele saw me and realized that I was only roughly 12 years old, he put me with these younger kids. And as soon as he saw my brother, he also put him with me on the left side of this table that was outdoors.
Now, I want to interject.
Outside.
Your brother had a limp, correct?
My brother was born with a slight deformity. One of his legs was weaker than the other, and he was limping. And as soon as Mengele saw my brother, who was 16 years old, my brother John, he also put him on the left side of the table.
Understood.
So here I am standing with maybe 300 or 400 children on the left side of Mengele's table. And suddenly, this prisoner that I worked for, who was the overseer of the Jewish Czech family camp, and he was not Jewish, he was German. He suddenly came from out of nowhere, out of the crowd of people. He grabbed me and he shoved me into a group of older kids, which were about 30 yards away. And as soon as he did that, he disappeared. And these boys were about 14 and 15 years old, And I realized when that happened that he suddenly changed, saved my life. It was the moment, you know, it was the moment when I realized that my brother and I were on death row, and that that really Brahman just shoved me into a group of kids that will probably survive, and that my brother is in big trouble.
So your brother unfortunately did not get to go with you to the right side of the table. He grabbed you and shoved you over there, and your brother did not go.
That's correct. He left my brother. He could not move both of us. He basically left my brother there with the other kids, and he grabbed me and shoved me over to the older group of boys. Roughly 90 of us were then transferred to another camp. I said goodbye. I said I had a chance to say goodbye to my brother and mother, not knowing for sure what was going to happen to her, and not really being 100% sure what's going to happen to my brother either. I had no firm knowledge that everybody else was going to be gassed. I just had no idea. I was concerned about my brother, but I certainly was not concerned about my mother at that point.
So you're.
I was transferred to another camp, which was perhaps 500 yards or 600 yards away, and my father, who was a physician, was transferred to a medical camp, which was maybe 1,000 yards away. So both my father and I were moved to another location in Auschwitz. And my mother, I found out after the war that my mother elected to stay with my brother because she knew that he was going to be gassed. And she did not want him to go into the gas chamber by himself, so she stayed with him. She volunteered to stay with him. And so both my mother and brother were gassed with probably a little over 4,000 other prisoners and all the children and most of the elderly. They were gassed on the 11th of July of 1944.
Now, Frank, you said you had a moment to say goodbye to your brother and your mother. How long did you actually have to speak with them, given that you were pulled over to the other side? I mean, were we talking seconds?
A very short time, extremely short time. I said goodbye to my brother, which took perhaps 15 or 20 seconds. And then I went over and spoke to my mother for maybe 2 or 3 minutes and said goodbye to her.
And that was the last time.
That was the last time I saw her. I said goodbye to her. She mentioned to me briefly, she said, remember your Uncle Frank, who is living in New York City. And remember that after the war, if you end up in Prague or wherever you might end up, make sure you get in touch with him. So she did. I guess she at that point believed that I was going to survive, and she told me, she reminded me to look up her brother, Uncle Frank Eisenstein, who at that time was living in New York City.
So your mother believed or knew somehow that you would survive and gave you the name of your uncle who was living in New York and to look him up afterwards.
Now, exactly.
You say you went to another camp, but it was a camp within Auschwitz, and your dad went to the medical camp. How much longer were you there?
I was in a men's camp.
And how?
Well, I was in a men's camp. I was in a men's camp in Auschwitz. With the other 90 elderly or older boys.
Mm-hmm.
They were all 14 and 15. I was roughly 12. I was in that men's camp in Auschwitz till January of 1945. It was the second week of January of 1945. And we were taken on a death march. At this point, the Russian army was getting too close to Auschwitz, and they started... The SS started moving prisoners out of Auschwitz. They wanted to get as many prisoners out from the hands of the Russians as possible. So they put us on a two-day death march, which I barely survived. I almost died on that death march, except a couple of Polish prisoners forced me to walk. I couldn't walk anymore, but they forced me to walk, and they actually made me survive. Made that death march, got on a train about 35 or 40 miles outside of Auschwitz, and was transported to Mauthausen, which was a large camp in Austria. My father at this point was already in Germany. He left in October of 1944, and he was transported to Germany. And he spent a couple of he spent time in a couple of camps in Germany before he was liberated by the American army.
Now, before you were liberated and went on this death march in 1945, did you have any type of communication with your father, who was in a different part of the camp in the medical section?
No, I only saw my father once when I was in the men's camp in Auschwitz, and he was in the medical camp. Somehow I got permission from the SS, and I don't know how I did it, but I got permission to see him for about 15 minutes before he left Auschwitz, and he left in October. So I probably saw him in September, sometimes in September, and we had a meeting one-on-one for about 10 or 15 minutes. And I saw him during that period of time, and he was a total wreck. He was just a total mental wreck. I saw him crying and so forth. He was just totally depressed. I already then suspected that that my mother perhaps did not make it, and that my brother did not make it. But I didn't ask him about them at all. We didn't talk about them at all.
Okay.
Then he was transported. I saw him leave the camp in October of 1944, and as I said before, I left in January, middle of January of 1945.
Wow. So, and you already answered my question for me, because I was going to ask if when you spoke with your father, if he told you anything about your brother or mother, but you just answered that question. So,
we didn't broach the subject. We did not. I didn't bring it up, and he did not bring it up. We didn't talk about my brother or mother at all.
So you went on this death march, and you ended up in another camp, and you were liberated by which army?
I ended up on a train. Well, I went on a death march to a Polish city called Gliwice in German. We were put on an open train. This was a coal car train designed for transporting coal.
Mm-hmm.
And we were put on an open train and transported for 2 days to across the Czech Republic to Austria. We ended up in a camp called Mauthausen, which was one of the biggest camps in Austria. We were there for several weeks. Then we were moved to another camp called Melk, in the town near the town of Melk. And then we went back to Mauthausen, and then back to a small camp in the woods, where we were eventually liberated by the American Army on May 4th, 1945.
All right, hold it. Hold it right there, because we've got to take our second break. We will be right back after this.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentecohen. Each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
And we are with Frank Grunwald, telling the story of his time after being born in Czechoslovakia, ending up in Auschwitz. When we left, you had been taken out of Auschwitz, you did a march, then you were on a train through Czechoslovakia, ended up in a camp in Austria, where it was liberated at the towards the end of the war by the American military. Take us from there. How did you reunite? What happened after that? You reunited with your father?
Yes, well, we were in this, our last location was a camp near the town of Gunskirchen. And Gunskirchen is a small Austrian town, and they literally dumped us into an area that was wooded, that the Germans basically built a barbed wire wall out of barbed wire. And they put about 17,000 or 16,000 prisoners into this wooded area because they just ran out of time. The American Army, mainly the Third Army, that was led by Patton, was approaching so quickly that the Germans ran out of time and they didn't know what to do with all these prisoners. So anyway, they dumped us into this plot of woods surrounded by barbed wire, and we were there for 4 or 5 days, most of the time without food or water. So we're getting very, very close to death. And then finally on the fifth day, and this is now May 4th, 1945, we were liberated by the American Army. And we were taken by trucks to one of the near town, which was the town of Hersching, Austria. We were put up, most of the boys that I was in with were put up in a public school. It was like a middle school. And they converted it converted the classrooms to bunk beds and made bedrooms out of the classrooms. And we were there for 3 or 4 weeks, on the American Army diet, and we were slowly recovering, gaining some weight. And then, two or three of the boys decided to jump a train and take a freight train to Prague. And they did. They made it. And by this time, my father returned to Prague from Germany, from a couple of camps in Germany that he was in. And he was looking for me and found two of these boys in a hospital in Prague. And he was told that there are two kids in the hospital and that they possibly might know where I am. And sure enough, they were two of the kids that jumped the train in out of Hersching, Austria, and ended up in Prague. My dad spoke to them, and they told him that I was in this elementary school in Hersching. And the next day, he and a friend of his drove to Hersching and found me in this school. So I was, Hersching was about 4-hour drive from Prague. And so I was basically reunited with my dad early June of 1945. And we drove back to Prague, and we eventually were able to move into our old apartment that we were kicked out of by the SS in 1942. And so we eventually ended up in the apartment that was ours. And my dad started practicing medicine, and you know, I started a fairly normal life. I went back to school and back to junior high school, and I started, you know, a relatively normal life at that point.
How did you end up, and when did you end up coming to the United States?
Well, we were in Prague from the spring of 1945 till the fall of 1949. And my dad remarried after the war, and his second wife, my stepmother, was a British citizen. She was living in England, in London. And she decided that she, since the communists took over the Czechoslovakia in 1948, she told my dad in late 48, early 49, that she does not want to live under the communist regime. Mm-hmm. And so my dad and I decided that we would leave Prague, escape from Prague, which we did. In the fall of 1949, we escaped to Austria from Prague, and then from Austria, we got the necessary immigration papers to immigrate to England. So we ended up in England for 2 years, and then from England, we immigrated to the United States in March of 1951.
Okay, now at some point on July 11th, 1944, the day your mom and brother were murdered, your mother wrote a letter that somehow, and we're talking, she wrote a letter within an hour or two of her death, somehow
correct,
got to your father, and it was passed on to you. Explain to me
correct
how this all came about and when you found out about the letter.
Okay, so apparently an hour or less before she died, as the trucks were approaching the Czech family camp to pick up the prisoners and take them into the gas chambers, just about half an hour before this, she somehow got a piece of paper and a pencil and wrote a note to my dad a short note. She put his name and his address, because she knew he was in the medical camp, and she put Dr. Grunwald, F-Lager, F stood for the medical, was the number for the medical camp. And she gave it to a guard. Now, you gotta remember that, that Auschwitz had something like 35,000 or 40,000 guards. There was a huge complex. And many of those guards were not SS guards. They were old, some of them were quite old or middle-aged German military people that were too old to be on the fighting on the front, so they were made into prison guards. And I don't exactly know who she gave it to, but she apparently must have given it to someone that she intuitively had confidence in, and this guard gave that letter the next day or even the same day to my father, who was in the medical camp. I heard about the letter after the war. My dad told me that he does have a letter from my mother, that it's a goodbye letter that she wrote to him just before her death, but I never saw it. I did not really want to, I was not really that curious about it, because I thought it would be too sad for me to see. So I never saw it till after my father's death, when I was cleaning out his apartment in New York City in 1967, when he died in the spring of 1967. And I finally did find the letter in his bedroom. And that was really the first time that I had the opportunity to read it.
Okay, now if you don't mind, I'd like to read the letter that your mom wrote, and I want to explain.
Yeah, I would just like.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's good. I just want to remind you that I just recently, actually 3.5 years ago, I have given this letter to the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. I didn't want this letter to be here. I didn't want it. It wasn't doing anybody any good. I made copies of the letter, so I have perfect copies of it, but I felt that other people should have the opportunity to see this letter, and I gave it to the United States National Holocaust Memorial Museum, and it's in Washington, D.C. right now on exhibit, on their permanent exhibit.
Right, and anyone who goes to that museum can find it there. I just want to let everyone know, when I read this, your given name when you were born and growing up in Czechoslovakia was Misha.
That's correct, which stands for Michael.
Okay.
In Czech.
So let me read this letter, because it mentions you in the letter, so I just wanted the people listening to the show to know. And I will try and read this letter and make it through. It's a very short letter, but this was written July 11th, 1944, to your father from your mother, Vilma. You, my only one, dearest, in isolation, we are waiting for darkness. We considered the possibility of hiding, but decided not to do it since we felt it would be hopeless. The famous trucks are already here, and we are waiting for it to begin. I am completely calm. You, my only and dearest one, do not blame yourself for what happened. It was our destiny. We did what we could. Stay healthy. And remember my words, that time will heal, if not completely, then at least partially. Take care of the little golden boy, and don't spoil him too much with your love. Both of you, stay healthy, my dear ones. I will be thinking of you and Misha. Have a fabulous life. We must board the trucks. And then she signed it, Into Eternity, Vilma. That letter, you waited how many years before you read that? Till 19 what?
I read it in 1967, so let's say from 47 to 67 would be 20
years.
So I waited, I actually read it about 22 years or 23 years after my dad got the letter.
Wow. And that letter, as I said, is on display at the National Memorial Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., the original. I cannot put into words what I'm feeling. There are so many questions I have, and unfortunately we don't have the time for them all. But I cannot thank you enough. I love the fact that you chose to share that letter with the world. Your story is amazing, and we will never, ever forget you or that story. Frank, I just, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. God bless you, and thank you so much.
It was a pleasure. I would love to come back on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio. Straight talk from Israel.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.